Special relationships and transatlantic correspondence galore. It's time for another installment of New York Real Talk on Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
It's the 60th, that's 60, 60th edition of New York Real Talk, and inevitably, Pamela Suman, our co-host and co-founder, fashionably late. Oh well, what the hey, I'm sure she'll get there in the end. We have got a megastar, of course, with us, ace producer and general all-around wonderful person. Pamela was so excited, probably she's beside herself with joy and expectation and anticipation. It's the fabulous Paul Antonelli. How are you, Paul?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to meet you, Alex.
Excellent. Well, likewise, again, a genuine delight as we continue the New York Real Talk saga across the era and so on. So, Paul, I'm going to start off by inviting you to, in a sense, share with us your own particular musical story. And obviously, how did you connect with Pamela Suman, who, again, I believe is a close family friend amongst other things?
Yes, I've known Pam for, I was going to say, I met her in the early 90s. And I grew up in Rhinebeck. I moved to New York City and was trying to become an audio engineer. And I did theater and freelanced, I ended up moving back to Rhinebeck and starting a studio in Germantown, New York, which I had for 12 years. This was in like 86. And then around 92, 93, I think I met Pam. She was working at the power station. And I don't know why either I was there or we struck up a conversation. I invited her to come up and do some demos because she had kind of convinced me that she was a singer-songwriter. And then, a couple of years later, we were tracking a record with her and Jerry. And we've all been very close ever since then. And it's funny, I knew who Jerry was. I heard about him, but I didn't really know, actually having to work with him. It was just a pleasure. And it's been years go on, and we've worked on a lot of records together. And I love having those guys in the studio. Jerry's just amazing musician and a great producer and a wonderful human being.
Yeah, I think I'd agree on all of those counts, which is wonderful. Pretty much the same thing's been said about Kathy Manso, who's just joined us. I know Kathy does have connection with New York, although she's originally from Miami, so she's interconnected, and she's currently over in Lincoln. So there we are, England, that would be, not Nebraska, easily confused. before we bring Kathy on board for this, Paul, I'm fascinated by your role. I mean, producer, record, I mean, there are so many things you've actually done. What so far has been one of the key highlights in which you'd say, yeah, as I look back over the last few decades, this is the one that I think, yeah, this is the most satisfying?
Well, that's a really good question. Because my role has been sorting things out for people, listening to tracks. Natalie Merchant, who's a client of mine, will come in and say, Paul, we're bringing in 30 different bands for the next 2 months. Can you organize their backline and whatever they need? I wear many hats. As I own a studio, I'm an engineer, I'm a producer, I clean and empty the dishwasher. But we're a big place, and it's just nice when you're involved on a project that actually goes somewhere, and it's on the radio. And we've been very lucky because the last 10 years have been really good for us in terms of artists and success.
Well, I mean, it's Clubhouse Studios, obviously, in Rhinebeck. And that's the key thing. You mentioned, obviously, Natalie Merchant. You also worked with Shawn Mendes. You developed a whole range of things with that. Do you feel as though the music industry is as healthy as it ever was? Or is it a case of it's going through cyclical phases of, well, sometimes there's creativity, sometimes there isn't?
Yeah, I think here's the thing. I mean, we do a lot of pop music. We had Post Malone. Last summer, we had Harry Styles, Don't Tell Anybody, Sabrina Carpenter. We did the Lumineers. It just keeps going. We do a ton of high-end jazz people. And the pop stuff, I think it's not as strong melody as it's more of hooks. And I miss those melodies. But when you do like traditional jazz, you get these beautiful melodies. And I think it's constantly changing. It's a moving target, you know, and doing pop music is completely different than tracking a rock band or tracking a folk artist or a jazz ensemble. You know, they seem to do everything one bit at a time, you know, set everything up and then, hey, let's go to this. Let's try drums. Let's try this, try that. And it's all these little bits together that make something where I kind of grew up playing, you know, working with artists that would track in a traditional fashion. But so it's changing.
In a recent interview, Peter Gabriel, whose album Io, long awaited, actually, it's nearly 20 years since he started saying that Io was going to actually be released, says that from his point of view, the process is equally, if not more important than the end product. Is that something you would identify with, or is it a case of, we can't wait 20 years for the next album?
What a great artist. And I hope I get a chance to see the tour. I'm a big fan. That's a really great question because I, in fact, enjoy the process. You know, whether it's a singer-songwriter or if it's, you know, somebody who has a lot of success, the process is so, it has a lot of redeeming qualities of you know, satisfaction, you know, because I'm really in it for the art. I'm in it for the fun of making great records. So I love the process, and the process drives the passion, if that makes any sense.
Oh, very much so. And do you have a favorite Peter Gabriel track you'd like us to squeeze in at present?
Oh God, Sledgehammer is one of my favorite. I mean, everything off So, I think, is brilliant. Red Rain, I love. I mean, if you want to play Sledgehammer, I mean, I have I know Tony Levin, his bass player lives up here, and I just spoke to him the other day. I was trying to get him on a session, and he said, I'm going to be out with Peter for 3 months. So,
yeah, but I mean, that's what I say. 20 years for the album, 3 months is just a drop in the ocean, really.
It really is. But I'm happy, you know, that since the pandemic is, you know, somewhat over, that people are going out to see live music and people like Peter Gabriel, you know, time is marching on. And we're not going to have that many times to see the Stones or Peter Gabriel. And, you know, I value that stuff. But I love Red Rain, Sledgehammer, either one of those, you know. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kevin Killens, who did the record, so.
We'll be right back.
There we are, Sledgehammer, as selected by Paul Antonelli, our first choice on the 60th edition of New York Real Talk. Still waiting for Pamela Suman. Maybe she's just shy. I don't know. Kathy Manso, over to you, good self. Any questions you'd like to ask the awesome, as I refer to him, the awesome Paul Antonelli?
Many questions. And I think I'll go with my more fun question. at least I think it's more fun. what I would like to ask you is, so obviously, like you said, you work and you do a lot of different things. You wear a lot of different hats. Yeah. And I'm sure you're always trying to reach a deadline, or you're trying to make it before a deadline. Can you think of a time or an occasion where you almost didn't make the deadline and it made it that much more satisfying than you did?
Kathy, that's a fantastic question. And here's an interesting thing. I don't know, my brain doesn't work as good as it used to, but there were times when, you know, we had to get it done. We had to turn it in, whether it was a commercial, mostly commercials, film, stuff that's going out on air. They would always say, we got to get this done quicker. But as I get on in my life, you know, we're mixing in the box these days, which, you know, mixing inside Pro Tools. And I'm finding it takes a lot longer for me to do one song as you know what I'm saying? Where I would usually, if I was mixing analog, we would have to make our decisions fairly quickly and keep moving. But Pro Tools, which is what I use, seems to take forever. And, you know, hi, Pam.
Yeah, she has arrived after obviously sort of just keeping us waiting. As I said, we needed somebody special for the 60th show, so we figured Paul Antonelli was indeed that person, and Pamela's apparently just been running. Never mind, that's okay. It's all right, Pam. It's your show, so let's progress ever onwards. Anyway, the interview's going well.
Yeah. Hi, Pam. But Kathy, it's like one time I was working with this band called Rusted Root. They're from Pittsburgh. They were on tour and they got called to do a soundtrack for a Jodie Foster movie called Home for the Holidays, the opening song. And, you know, they're on tour. They show up in the studio at midnight. We work till, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, send the tapes to Los Angeles. And yeah, the stress kind of makes, you know, the coffee, you just kind of get it done. You know what I mean? Nowadays, I'm not an advocate for people working in their homes for, you know, final production, but it is a fact of life. I still think people that use big studios, the people that can afford to use big studios, it's as important as everything else. And the home thing is great for songwriting and great for pre-production and song ideas, you know, but it just seems... it takes so long to get stuff done in Pro Tools. You know, I tend to want to like make things a lot nicer. So Pam, I sent you a couple of tracks. Did you get them?
Sure. When did you send them? Sorry, we just got upstate. We came upstate and we just
you need a new driver first and foremost, because he's late.
Look, he can't be the best guitarist the world's ever seen and a decent driver. We've got to actually coordinate these things. So you know
exactly.
Alex is so you've yet to meet Alex. Now you're meeting Alex. I'm very, very excited because he is some kind of magic wizard. Like
he's amazing, and he made me feel comfortable in 8 seconds.
So you don't need me here. I should just go light a fire, go chop some wood and light a fire.
Darn it. I mean, that's terrible. I was aiming to make it comfortable within 5 seconds. If it's 8 seconds, I'm going to leave now. It's terrible.
No.
Paul, did you email? Because I'll just send it.
Yeah. I sent like a WeTransfer thing. I don't know if that worked or not.
Oh, yeah, no problem. And I can send that to you. Should I send that to you after Alex?
It'll all be wonderful. Exactly. That's all we need
it'll
to do.
It'll all be
anyway,
wonderful.
For this particular track, which is in the ether at present, Paul, would you like to introduce it so we can drop it into the system quite happily?
Sure. I've been working with this singer-songwriter named Simon McTeague. And he's from Great Barrington, Mass, and we had just kind of met, and I fell in love with his songs. And I was like, oh, I love this guy. Anyway, I'm in the middle of finishing this record. It's almost done, and this is a track called Only Love, and if you can get it and play it, I would love to play it and see what you guys think.
Amazing Only Love. I'm taking it as going to be fabulous and truly wonderful. It's called The Magic of Editing and Packaging Things Together. It's the 60th New York Real Talk. We have Pamela Sue Mann. We have Kathy Manso. We also have Paul Antonelli in the studio with us. Pamela, we've found the rationale in terms of where Paul first encountered your good self and how he bonded with yourself and Jerry. So we've dealt with that story. I mean, it's extraordinary. You know, the New Jersey-New York connection continues ever more, it would seem.
You know, it is true. One thing I'd love to say about Paul, because it's so important, and it's very rare, very, very rare. Paul is so generous, and he is such a champion of songwriters and such a champion of people who have their own sound. And so many people these days, especially since it's so expensive and difficult to keep an incredible studio like Paul has going, they're really so involved in the music business that they don't really have time to really, I'm generalizing, of course I'm generalizing, but I feel like what Paul does, what he stands for, what he's been about since I've met him many moons ago, he's consistently a champion for people who, you know, the thing about singer-songwriters is they don't always have the confidence to believe that they're any good. I was going to swear again, but I won't do that. I'm gonna remember. So, you know, someone like Paul, who who we respect so much, for them to believe in you can be the difference between you continuing to do this throughout your life or quitting. So many incredibly brilliantly talented people give up, or they start doing something else and they stop creating and they stop trying. And I have to say that Paul is one of the very, very few people who have kept me going with this, you know, as a singer-songwriter. So
it's very, very, very kind.
It's true. It's not kind. I'm not kind. I don't like Paul. No, I don't like him.
Well, no, I mean, I think, you know, I'm in it for the passion of the music, and, you know, like this guy, Simon, he has this passion, and I saw something, and I see a lot of stuff, you know, I could name drop all day long of the projects that have been in and out of here and stuff, but every now and then something grabs me, and that's why I'm in it. I've been in it like this, it's, you know, since 1980. It's a long time. Maybe longer than your husband, Pam.
No, surely not. It's a whole different area on that side of things. That. In terms of, I mean, let's go back to the 1980s, before Kathy Mancer was even born, I think, possibly, on that system.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's one of those areas whereby we look back at some of the electro-pop bands there. I mean, I'm not sure, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, OMD, they produced a whole wealth of aspects there with respect to architecture and morality and so on. And then just as it seems as though they're going wonderfully well, they seem to have a commercial flop. And then people say, oh, it's all over. And yet somehow 20 years later, people turn around and say, actually, there was some really innovative material there. Do you often find that sometimes you produce material and maybe the audiences just aren't ready for it? And so for whatever reason, even though in your intuitive feeling, you think this is great, it just doesn't fly.
Well, yeah. And I think a lot has to be said, like, you know, being in the right place at the right time. I've always been kind of outside the circle of, you know, the people that have deals and, you know, stuff like that. Perfect example. What about The Cure? Been together since 1977. I've never worked with them, but Reeves, a good friend of ours, is in the band. They have an amazing songbook. You know, there's a lot of bands that, and you know, they didn't have a hit till 19, you know, their second hit was Friday I'm in Love, 1994. No hits. And then 20 years later, they're headlining festivals all over the world. So I think, you know, being in the right place at the right time is really critical in the music business. And sometimes you just don't get it. You know, you kind of have to have a lawyer, a record company, a manager, and all the stars aligned at the same time so people can hear your music. It doesn't mean what you're doing is bad. My feeling is really that everything deserves to be heard, and it'll rise at a certain point. You know, I mean, there is crap out there. I'm not going to, you know, say there isn't. Great melodies, great songwriting, you know, still wins in my book. Yeah. And it'll, if it doesn't get an audience right away, it will, you know, it manifests to something at some point, it seems, for me.
To use the classic cliche, the audio cream rises to the top. Kathy, back to yourself, I feel.
Yes, so I was curious, because you work with creatives, you yourself are creative, and you've really devoted, you know, almost a lifetime to music. And I was just wondering, if you could go into another creative field, which would it be outside of music?
Well, that's a really good... The only field I feel like could be really helpful would be teaching, you know, what I know and what I do. I don't think I could start anything now, because I've been doing this since I've been 20, you know, and I never thought I was a great musician. I never thought I had wicked stage fright. And quite honestly, I never knew you didn't have to be that good. I, you know, I swear to God. And And one of the things that, like, when I first saw the board, when I was like 15, I said, somebody gets paid to do that. And I thought, oh my God, I could hide out in this room and nobody could see me. And, you know, I'd always have a job. And then when I started, you know, new wave hit, like OMD, you know, Elvis Costello, Joe Jackson, and all those guys. And I thought, well, whatever's playing in a band and the music style changes and my band doesn't become, it's not popular anymore. What do? If I work the board, I'll always have a job. And that was kind of my sense. But to answer your question, the only thing I really figured I could help is I do train a lot of interns here and also assistant engineers, and a lot of them become very successful and are doing very well, you know, over the last couple of decades.
Well, then to go into your teaching field, if you had to sum it up to an intern or someone who's looking to go into a similar path as you, how would you kind of sum up your job in, or I guess the passion in a sentence or a few words, if you can?
Let's see. One of the things that I'm working on doing is having a charity that I started. It's called 639. And it basically is going to be about raising money for underprivileged kids to learn about recording hip hop, recording strings, television music. And I think I'm going to take my energy and kind of put it towards that to kind of help other people, because I really love it when somebody who feels like they can't do something can actually do something and prove something. And I think that would be a really good way for me to spend my golden years helping out with people, you know, helping people get started and stuff. I don't know if that's answered the question or not. Probably not, but
Paul's generous nature, because it makes a lot of sense. Paul, I didn't even know you were doing that, but I'm not surprised, and I think it's incredible. And that, you know, it's interesting. You see it all over. You see the young kids, so many of them, young white kids, privileged, they go on to do cool things because their parents can afford to send them to the schools and give them these opportunities that, frankly, you need money to even be around that environment.
Right.
Unless you do it in a very unschooled way, which was happening so much more in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, in America, especially with, you know, consumerism and capitalism just like exploding out the edges now.
Those are the two foundation pillars on which the United States of America are actually built, Pamela, surely. So without consumerism and capitalism, you'd have 250 years of whatever.
I think it's incredible. I mean, Paul, thank you for doing that, because there's so many talented people that just don't get the opportunity.
Well,
and, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with, you know, interns that come here, and then, you know, we train them, we try to get them to a certain point, and then they go off on their own and they're successful. But I also feel that there's, you know, I want to see more women in the music business here, and I want to see more women engineers. And I also want to see other kids that don't have the privilege to see. When I was 15 years old, I was in a small artsy school, and we took a field trip to a recording studio, and I never came out of it. I've been doing this since I've been 19. And I want to see that with other kids. And, you know, Kathy, that's the thing that I want to address in terms of, you know, you have to have the passion and the blinders on to do it, but you also need to be able to see that, to know that, hey, that's, you know, I'm a woman, I could be an engineer. He can do it, I can do it. And, you know, I think that's really important in our culture. We need more women in making records.
No, I agree with you. I think it starts at a really young age, and having, like you said, your opportunity when you were in high school to go be able to go and see it yourself is where it sparks that kind of idea. You know, I didn't know radio was an option for me until I was in university. So I got a little bit lucky in that way.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it was one of those love hate relationships, because I did really well when I was in uni with it. I even rose to a director position with the radio station, but then you graduate and then trying to get a job after that, granted it was after the recession, so not a great time. but it's been one of those things that it's like, how do you get back into this industry you had a lot of love for?
Well, clearly it's just as well Siren Radio could actually pick you up, Kathy. Otherwise, heaven only knows what talents would have been lost for the whole process. Paul, we talked about Peter Gabriel earlier. I'm going to ask you now, do you have a favorite OMD song you'd like us to feature?
Oh, jeez.
We can go Joan of Arc, we can go Souvenir, we can go Locomotion, we can go wherever you wish.
I think Locomotion was one that I played quite a bit. I also, to really show how old I used to buy 12-inch singles of OMD and... you know, every 12-inch single that came out of England, I would run to the record store and buy. I loved remixes. Elvis Costello, Every Day I Write the Book, you know, 12-inch single. Everything that was a 12-inch remix, I loved. You know, Locomotion is cool. Play whatever,
well,
you know.
We may feature some Elvis later in the program, but for now, here's Locomotion.
Thank you.
Pamela, it's time for that moment where you need to actually ask Paul the wacky New York experience. I don't know if you've prepared him for this. It is our 60th show. As long as he doesn't actually use any foul language, all's well with the world. Carry on, Pamela.
Well, then I just don't think he's going to be able to share with us.
Oh, no.
Snow, Paul, I did not prepare you for this, but I am so happy to ask you because I do, as your friend, want to know what this was. So New York City is a vortex, and it's, I feel like, really very bizarre things happen, you know, moment to moment in that place, and always have and always will. So I'd like to know, Paul and Janelle, what is your New York wacky moment? In other words, sometime you were in the city and something happened and it was insane, off the charts. You were just like, okay, only in New York did this happen.
Oh my God.
I know, it put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's so awesome. You know, in the early 80s, I worked for a sound company called Rock City Sound, and they were out of Rhinebeck, and I had just moved to Manhattan, and I had an apartment in Manhattan, and they kept calling me up, and they would say, hey, man, you know, we got to do this, you know, the Apollo Theater, and I'd be like, no, man, I can't do it, I can't do it, and they'd be like, come on, we don't have anybody else, come do it. Then I have to come back up to Rhinebeck, load this truck, and then drive down to New York. And, you know, I can't tell you. I think it was called Showtime at the Apollo. It was the where everybody auditions and they get booed off the stage and stuff like that. And, you know, it was probably like a hot summer night. And, you know, I was on the side of the stage, you know, helping, you know, handing out microphones and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I just couldn't believe I was in the Apollo Theater. Now, this is probably 1982, somewhere around there, you know, and, you know, I mean, I didn't get mugged or anything, but, you know, like, you know, working in the city at an iconic club, you know, was, you know, like nothing happened except the idea of actually, you know, and I was like, you know, really surprised, you know, and because it wasn't like I didn't really know about it. I was like, I didn't know that it had been going on for, you know, 20 years, you know? So that was a real good wake-up call for me to say, wow, I'm in New York, you know? And I was determined to get a job at a studio. And what happened, just a little side note, is the sound company was working on, they said, hey, we have to go to DC for the weekend for a show, a play. Do you want to do it? I said, no, I don't want to do it. And they were like, we need you. Can you come do it? And I was like, okay. And then I ended up doing mixing for a play for 4 years after that. You know, working for the sound company at the Apollo Theater, the stage manager says, hey, they need you on a show in DC. You know, New York, shit happens, right?
Exactly. There you are. Sorry. Give me at least three edits to actually work into the system. It's perfect. Okay.
Sorry, Kathy.
I'm not offended.
And I think Paul made a really important, I'm sorry, I'm barging in here, but I'm so excited. Also, last time I saw you was in parking lot during the pandemic. And there was no, you know, illicit trade going on, trust me. But we just kind of ran into each other. And it was just from across the parking lot. It was so great. But, you know, that's that point of connection. And I think New York is, you know, it's that silly, I'm not even going to quote it. But basically, you know, you're there and
something happens.
Yeah, something happens. You make a connection. And it is. It's almost like the barriers cross between dreams and reality. And maybe that's where you think, well, I just imagined in my mind I could do this. But then you step in and Jerry has a favorite quote that he says, and it has a lot to do with being on the road, but it has to do with like living your life as a musician, and he calls it living the dream. It's a little fantastic. It's funny because that's it, you know, you think about the dream, it's the dream, and then you can realize a place like New York is really great for it. So that was a great example of that.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to work in a studio, and I went down to DC and it was all these, it was called The Gospel at Colonus. Morgan Freeman was in the show, and we brought in a whole brand new sound system, and all the musicians were New York musicians, like heavy duty session guys. And they were so grateful. And the stage manager said, please, you know, stay. And I go, I can't stay. I just moved to New York. I'm going to go to the power station. I'm going to go to Clinton. I'm going to go to all these places. And they kept, you know, every time they would do a run in a city, they would say, will you work until we get another guy? And it went on for 5 years, you know? Yeah. So I did live sound for 5 years in theater.
As I said, clearly the audio cream rises to the top. Pama, it's time for those last two questions. Off you go. For show number 60 in New York Real Talk, please ask them to Paul.
Okay. And I want you to say yes to both of them, but you don't have to. You should answer honestly.
Okay.
Number one. That's
a bit like the kind of puss in boots with the kind of big eyes saying, I want you to say yes. You don't have to, but I want you to. What's he going to do? It's emotional blackmail, Pam. Anyway, carry on.
No, Paul's real. Paul is very real. And so
he's from New Jersey. What do we expect?
The first question is, have you had a good time with us? And the second question is, will you please come back soon?
Yes and yes. First of all, Alex, you're amazing. And Kathy, thank you so much for asking wonderful questions. I love this format. Please call me to be on. I wish I had better things to talk about, you know?
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That's why we're going to have you back.
I could tell you how I almost crashed in a Harry Styles Ferrari.
Oh, yes. I want to know that one. Yes.
Well, he drove here in a Ferrari, and we met in the lounge. And as we were walking out the door, I said, oh, Harry, I'm so sorry. I backed into your Ferrari. And I was only kidding. And he turned around and said, that's all right, mate. Don't worry. I'll get another one. And he was wonderful.
That's true American-Anglo relationships at their finest there, basically. If only sort of all our politicians could work on that premise, we'd be a lot happier. There you go.
It would be amazing. But I just couldn't let him come here and not, you know, make him laugh. You know, that was, you know.
Yeah. Well,
we'll see if he comes back.
Pamela, New York, of course, for our 60th show for New York Real Talk. It's home of the world's what?
Okay, Paul, you're going to love this. Ready?
Yep.
New York City, home of the world's finest pickle.
tell me you don't know the difference between a lover and a fighter. With my pen and my electric typewriter, even in a perfect world where everyone was equal, I'd still own the film rights and be working on the
lost, I'm a child.
Red rain coming down, red rain.